You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to this week's Glad Tidings, the Athletic's Everton podcast. My name is Paddy Boyland and we're without Greg O'Keefe this week. He's on his own international break. But in the spirit of things, we've decided to go global, and this week I'm joined by two of my fellow writers of the Athletic and two Evertonians, more importantly. Delighted to be joined by Rob Beertemphill and by Kevin Fishbane. Chaps, thanks for coming on to talk about Everton, as we were saying. Off air, it would have been a different conversation a few weeks ago, but I appreciate you coming on. How are you both doing?
I'm doing well, Paddy. It's I'm coming at you from the suburbs of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where it is actually a rare sunny day in autumn, and which is nice to have. We just had some pretty good weather the past couple of days, and now it's going to become a lot more dismal and gray and wintry. So I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
And I take it that Rob is getting the weather we had in Chicago a couple days ago, and where I am. And I know we'll get into this, Patty, but I'm here in Chicago Bears land, where quite similar to Everton, they got off to a miraculous start that had the city pretty excited, and now they have completely fallen off the ledge.
Now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a week. There's plenty of great Everton articles on there and so much more. Just go to theathletic.com/EvertonPod. That's theathletic.com/EvertonPod to sign up now. Rob, maybe start with you, and you want to talk to me a little bit about kind of your background and why it is you decided to gravitate towards this weird and wonderful club we call Everton.
Well, I started playing, and I'll try to stick to calling it football, and make sure we're not confusing it with the Bears. But I started playing football when I was in grade school, and I was a tall kid, and kind of, you know, and I moved okay. And I wanted to be a sweeper. That was my goal. I loved playing sweeper. I just loved the tactics of it and the aggressiveness of it. And the coach took a look at the tall kid and said, "Hey, you're a goaltender." and I hated it. I hated playing goal. So my football career was brief and unfulfilling. And then for the past, 25 odd years or whatever, I've been I've covered football, but American football. I covered Penn State football here in the Big Ten Conference. That's college football. But for the most part, my main gig as it is now has been the Pittsburgh Pirates, which is the Major League Baseball team, at least nominally, considering they had the worst record in the league this past summer. And I became an Everton fan. It was about, 8 or 10 years ago when, you guys can relate to this. As a writer, you put aside to a degree your fandom, and you look at things, objectively and try to, be a reporter. And it was hard when I covered Penn State football, because I attended Penn State University. So it's like everybody's like, "Oh, that must be great." I'm like, "Well, it's not really, because you can't enjoy the game the way that you used to." And growing up in Pittsburgh and covering the Pirates, it's the same kind of thing. You really can't, you don't let yourself be a full-on fan. So I wanted something that I could be a fan of, that I would have no chance of being conflicted. And I thought, well, Premier League. I like soccer. I started searching about for a team, and there's a lot of Evertonians here in Pittsburgh. One of my best friends told me about Everton, and I looked into it, and it just felt right. And at that time, they had a real, electrifying player named Lukaku, and yep. I just enjoyed watching him play so much. And before you knew it, every Saturday morning, I was trudging over across town. There's a pub here that does Premier League all day, and groups of supporters get together and watch games. And sometimes it's loud and boisterous. I had my first derby experience there, which was fantastic. So it just felt right. And I know that people have said, you know, you're born, not made an Evertonian. And that's kind of how it felt for me, because it's a team that is kind of the underdog, that has kind of struggled, you know, and has had times of great success that people look back fondly out now and say, why the hell can't we have that again? And that's kind of what it's like to be a Pirates fan. So it's a good fit for me.
And Rob, you mentioned there that in Pittsburgh in particular, that there seems to be a thriving collection of Evertonians. Have you been able to understand maybe why that is?
You know, I think some of it is that it, you know, and I've noticed a lot of the people who we get together to watch games, a lot of them are also the people who are diehard Pirates fans. And like I said, there's just that common sense of an underdog team, you know, not rooting for the flashy, you know. I never had any interest at the time in becoming a Man U fan. I flirted briefly with Crystal Palace, and yes, I even admit I flirted with Liverpool.
Oh.
But a lot of other people, you know, just talking to them, the sense was just like, this is a club that is just kind of gritty, and I like that, and I liked the style of play. I like, you know, just you know, it was easy to gravitate that when I found other people kind of felt the same way, that there was that just that aura around it that you have if you're a Pirates fan, because this is a team that has a small budget, that never has flashy players, or if it does have a superstar player, he doesn't stick around for long because he goes to another town with a bigger paycheck and a bigger chance of going to the playoffs, Lukaku, and. You know, so that's why I think a lot of people here in Pittsburgh. Now, there is a pretty big, sizable, and there's a local radio guy who kind of leads the charge, Liverpool contingent in town. So, you know, I think maybe just the fact that the towns are a little bit similar. It's kind of a working man's town, a blue-collar town. People like that kind of feel, and it just, like I said, it just feels right. It's a good fit.
And Kevin, how about you? Is it as simple like as with Rob, where you kind of gravitated of your own accord to Everton, or is there something else at work here?
No, it's kind of similar. I like Rob. I grew up playing football a little bit. I was way too skinny and scrawny to play American football, and I actually liked playing goalie. But I feel like a typical American soccer fan in the early 21st century in terms of I watched soccer football every 4 years. Like I got really into both the men's and women's World Cup.
Okay.
And then that was it. And then I didn't even really know or understand much about the Premier League. And then when I got to college, I'll date myself a bit, in 2006, so this was right after the 06 World Cup, and I had the FIFA game on my Xbox. So I got really into FIFA, but I was playing with the national teams. I would play as Argentina, you know, I would play as not the premier clubs. And I became good friends with the guy in the dorm next door. He's still one of my closest friends, and he was a huge Tottenham supporter. And he was explaining to me how the Premier League worked and all this stuff. And he said, you got to pick a club. This is the perfect time to do it. You're starting college, and you try new things in college, right? That's what you do. So I know Rob is familiar with Bill Simmons. I'm not sure how much Bill Simmons has gotten across the pond, but not he much. Had kind of a famous article for ESPN where he tried to pick a premier club. So my friend sent me that, and I kind of went through Bill's decision making, and I actually didn't really go full in because I already knew I liked Tim Howard a lot, and I already had kind of followed Tim Cahill a little bit in the world for Australia in the World Cup. I was like, well, there's already two players I know on this one, and but what the kicker is, my friend tried to convince me to pick Reading, and I said no. I really think I've been reading about Everton. I feel like for a Chicago person, there's some similarities which we can get into, and I really like Tim Howard. I'm going to pick Everton. He was like, I think you should pick Reading, and of course, like 2 years later, Reading was relegated. So that 06-07 year, you know, Everton finished sixth, and then I, I don't know. And again, this could be me just being, egotistical as an American, not knowing which phrases go which ways, but fair weather fan. I don't know if that, that gets, so I wouldn't say I'm so much as a fair weather fan. It's just I cover American football. I cover the Chicago Bears, and I've covered American football since 2010. So my weekends in the fall are pretty booked. Every Sunday, certainly, and a lot of Saturdays I'm traveling or, at college football games. And so what kind of happened in those years, which is coincidentally gets once Rob started getting into Everton, is when I would, every August I'd catch up on the transfer market, I'd read a bunch of preview articles, I'd watch the first two matches, and then American football would start, and I just didn't have time. And then come January, February, Everton wasn't really in the thick of things as much, and I would start to dwindle. But Patty, what was so fun when the Athletic UK launched and you and Greg came on board, I said, well, this is wonderful. Now I have colleagues who, cover the club, and it's just a perfect time to really, I'd gone from watching a few matches every year to like, all right, this is the perfect time for me to dive back in. The pandemic has allowed it to be a little easier to just stay at home and I'm not traveling during Chicago Bears season. So yeah, as I said, I always watched them, and but it was much more in college, and I actually feel kind of silly because the Chicago Evertonians Club is a very robust group, and I've been kind of following them on Facebook and Twitter, and I feel so embarrassed. They're the bar that they watch Everton at every Saturday and Sunday is a few blocks from where I used to live, and I just didn't even know about it. It was right when I was I'd finished college, and I would have totally been there on the weekend mornings. So I missed out of that. Now I'm moved out to suburbia, so it's a little harder to make that trek. But that would be my Everton journey.
It's funny Rob mentions covering the side that you support, what that does to your reporting and to your enjoyment of games, because like you've mentioned there, we started the Athletic over in this side of the world in August 2019, I think it was. And myself and Greg are obviously both Evertonians, and when they win, it's fantastic. And you get to talk about James Rodriguez being fantastic and going further back, like to Lukaku doing really well. But I remember after, I don't know if either of you guys remember this game, last year Everton drew 2-2 with Newcastle at home. And I think until the 93rd minute, they were winning 2-0, Everton. Mm-hmm. Newcastle somehow, Newcastle's centre-half, who doesn't score any goals, somehow managed to score twice, one of which was an overhead kick in the final 2 minutes of the game. And then the next morning, I woke up with a bit of a sore head and a bit grumpy, and I had a phone call from an editor who said to me, we'd like you to watch that final 5 minutes back and deconstruct everything that went wrong. And I just thought to myself, that's probably the last thing I would want to do as a supporter at the moment, but it's a kind of a journalistic obligation to do that. And I guess it almost becomes a labor of love. Just picking up on something you said there, Kev, you were talking about parallels maybe between the Bears and Everton. And I was telling both of you off air in the build-up to the pod that whenever I see an article that's kind of along the lines of, if you support X Premier League team, you should support Y NFL side. And when I do that, I always see Everton and Chicago Bears pulled together for some reason. So I mean, I'll be honest, I'll hold my hands up. I don't know much about the NFL in particular, but why do you think that is, Kev?
It's an interesting thing because so Roger Bennett is kind of the famous example of the crossover. So Raj has talked a lot about his affinity for the Chicago Bears, and obviously he's an Everton supporter. So I kind of figured it was just that. And then for when the Premier League restarted with Ed Malyon, our editor here at The Athletic, he he's kind of the flip. So he lives in Chicago now, and he's become a big Bears fan. He's kind of adopted the Bears. And he and I worked together on trying to pair each team. And I said, well, I know the Bears so well, I know the Everton so well, I'm just going to pair them. And then I started doing research, and there is some kind of eerie parallels. So, they're both founding members of their leagues. You know, the Bears are a charter franchise of the NFL. And then, so Patty, you'll get appreciate this is, so the Bears won the championship in 1963. You know, they won the Super Bowl in 1985. Their other great years were kind of in the 20s and 30s. And then since 1985, they've been pretty much flailing with little blips here and there. Like 2006, they were really good, but they haven't won the Super Bowl since 1985. They've only made the playoffs once this decade. And the other thing that so you have those similarities, you think about the rivalry with Liverpool. Well, the Bears have the Green Bay Packers, and the Green Bay Packers are certainly way more popular than the Bears and have had way more success, especially in the past 20, 30 years, than the Chicago Bears have. And they both, you know, have the color blue, which might help at a superficial in a superficial sense. But yeah, so when I was researching that, not just kind of the years, but just the fact that they've been around forever, and you think about historically just the greatness that, you know, people have so many wonderful memories of the 85 Bears and even the 63 Bears, and you hear about those teams so much, but you don't hear as much about any team from the past 20, 25 years, and they just kind of tend to break your heart. So I will say, Patty, if you are looking to pick an NFL team, I would be careful before you pick the Chicago Bears, even though there are those similarities.
I'm just wondering, because there are quite obvious parallels, as you've mentioned there, but I'm just wondering if I can take any more pain in my life, and whether I can actually commit to it, to another side that inflicts that level of pain on you. And I'm not entirely sure, but it is interesting, like you say, 60s and 80s, a period of success for the Chicago Bears. Also when Everton were at their best as well. One of the things I wanted to pick up on from what you said, Rob, you were talking about the similarities, not only necessarily between the two clubs, the two institutions, but also maybe the two cities. And just mm-hmm. I wanted to unpack a little further what you meant by that in relation to Liverpool, obviously, but also Pittsburgh.
Well, we don't have seagulls, so that's one area where you guys got us. We do have pigeons, though, which is, you know, it's a curse.
That might be worse.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but it's a town that when I grew up here, I was born in the mid 60s. So when I really came of age, high school, college years, it was, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. And the city was really undergoing a bit of a transformation because it was always a blue-collar town. It was, you know, you've heard the nicknames, you know, the Steel City, the Smoky City. Yeah. The steel industry was so big. And, you know, I talked to my parents and grandparents about what it was Pittsburgh used to be like, where the streetlights would be on at, you know, 12 o'clock in the afternoons because there was so much filth in the air from the mills and whatnot. But then that all really changed, and rather quickly in the 80s, whenever that whole industry in Pittsburgh just shut down. And it affected, obviously, the economy and to a big degree the culture, because it's a town of neighborhoods. And I think that's one thing, you know, that I like about Chicago, Kevin, is that, you know, there are distinctive neighborhoods in Pittsburgh. Whatever part of town you come from, you know, there's a lot of maybe ethnic feel, because different groups settled in certain areas. Mm-hmm. But there's also even just like linguistic things. Like my accent is North Side Pittsburgh. If you're from the South Side, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more nasally, and I think a lot more annoying than my North Side accent. But you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a very, and even though that, you know, the economy has kind of shifted now more toward a high tech kind of thing, mm-hmm. it's still I think a very honest kind of gritty place to live. They don't put up with bullshit. They don't put on airs for the most part here. And I think that's something that, you know, I have not yet been to Great Britain. It's on the bucket list. A trip to Goodison, hopefully before it shuts down, is on the bucket list. My wife has been there, and she has relatives there as well. But I haven't gotten the chance to go there yet. I'm really looking forward to just experiencing the town, because I've talked to other people, other writers, ball writers, who have made trips over there, a few with Everton USA for games, and they talk about how it has that kind of I guess in some ways, there's what they say is there's like a Midwestern USA kind of feel to the town. So I'd like to experience that for myself and judge if it's accurate or not.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
One of the things that I've enjoyed most about the job since starting with The Athletic has been the extent of the interaction with supporters of Everton in the US. I would say there's a sizable backing for Everton, and there's a sizable following on our Everton page now on the Athletic site, interacting with US supporters more or less now on a regular basis, you might say. For you, Kevin, why do you think Everton do have this relatively sizable following in the States?
Yeah, well, you know, I do wonder if the connection for me, the Tim Howard connection, and then obviously Landon Donovan. I do wonder how much that plays a role for some people, looking back and you know, wanting to find clubs with players from the United States that, you know, they can gravitate to easily. But then, you know, I think we all know, and Rob certainly does too, that if you're a true football fan in America, you probably aren't the biggest fan of the U.S. men's national team because of how miserable okay. they've been, especially recently. But yeah, I think that might have something to do with it. And I do wonder if there is a, you know, different people, you know, like, you know, on the Chicago Bears beat, there's a mix. We have a Man City fan. We actually have a Fulham supporter. So when the Bears played in London last October, Everton was, I want to say they were on one of the coasts. So I wouldn't have been able to make the trip. So we all went to a Fulham match, which was a blast. It was my first, and it was an incredible atmosphere. And Patty, when I was there, thinking like you get to experience that every weekend. Well, not now, obviously, with the pandemic, but you get to experience that every weekend. But yeah, I wonder if there are certain fans who don't want to pick Manchester United that, you know, go out of their way not to pick maybe even Liverpool and Chelsea, and I don't know maybe even throw Arsenal in there just because they don't want to pick the you know, the big four, the known clubs, and I would say right now Man City's in that category too, just based on, you know, the money situation. And that's one of the biggest differences too between, you know, the, you know, European football and certainly American football, is there's a salary cap here. And that really leads to a lot of parity in the NFL, which I was thinking, Patty, when you were thinking about picking an NFL team, there's not many NFL teams that sustain success the way you see in the Premier League. And I think that the way a lot of American sports fans are is they hate the New York Yankees. They hate the Los Angeles Lakers. They hate some of these, you know, in the NFL, it would probably be the New England Patriots. You know, they hate the longtime winners. And maybe there's this thing of Everton, okay, they're not perennial bottom dwellers, but they're not going to be one of the big teams. I can't be called, a front runner for picking the Toffees. So, you know, that could also be one of the factors for some American fans.
One of the things my buddy told me was that he, just what you said there, Kevin, is that Everton, you know, it's never going to be that team that you pick every year to be on top of the table, but it's also you're not going to have to be like, nor, at least not usually, biting your nails about the possibility of, you know, of being relegated. So that makes those times when it does, you know, ascend to the top four or whatever, that much sweeter.
I guess you're both right. And I was just thinking when I was growing up as a kid, as an Everton fan as a kid, I would always hang my hat, so to speak, on one or two players, the kinds of players that you would think would almost be transformational. Mm-hmm. So, Rob, you mentioned there Romelu Lukaku, who obviously now has kind of moved on to pastures new. So I just wanted to get for both of you, given that it is pretty much a feast or famine with Everton at this moment in time, I wanted to get from both of you a sense of your favourite Everton players and your favourite Everton memories. And maybe we could start with you, Rob. You speak about Lukaku there. Do you have any particular games in mind where you kind of just lit things up and you remember just kind of going, wow?
Oh, boy, you know, I think for me it was the first game that I saw that we went over to the place. It's called Piper's Pub. On the south side of Pittsburgh, where the, you know, where it's like an all day Premier League marathon, and I can't remember for them. I think it might have been Tottenham. I can't remember who the opponent was that day, but just seeing Lukaku scored only once in that game, I remember, but it was one of those games where he seemed to be in on every moment, every play, every time that there was, you know, a question being asked, or and on either side of the pitch, he found a way to be involved in that. And I remember thinking, wow, that's the kind of guy that you really like to see. And over the years too, it's funny because my other favorite player is maybe not, he has offensive flair as well, but he's a defender. It would be Seamus Coleman. I just, you know, and that's why it's been difficult this past, you know, couple of years to watch Everton, because he's been so banged up, you know, with the injuries. But just just the way he plays and the steadying force that he is out there in so many different ways, and it just seems like there are times when there needs to be whether he can affect settling down the midfield, he can affect the pace of the attack. He does so many things. It's kind of the guy that I wanted to be, I guess, when I was that teenage soccer player who wanted to be a sweeper, but I wanted to be able to affect the game in every facet. I wanted to be the guy who could, stick it in every now and then and get everyone's attention. Obviously, I wasn't quick enough and sure-footed enough to become that. So instead, I became the goalie who got kicked in the face. but, so for me, those are the two guys that really have, just sparked my fandom. Rooney was magnificent, and there's been some other guys who I've loved playing. Tim Howard was just amazing. And I'm still hanging in there trying to be a Pickford fan. But for me, Coleman and Lukaku were just the two players that for me transcended everything else in recent Everton lore.
Kev, how about you?
Yeah, well, I obviously mentioned Tim Howard and Tim Cahill as my introduction to Everton. But, you look back at that club, Patty. I mean, Mikel Arteta was, fun to watch. And actually, this is, very elementary, but as a big FIFA player back then, I always liked making a substitution at the end for a striker. So I would always put in James Vaughn. or Victor Anchibi at the end to try to get that little spark and little goal at the end. Back to a match I remember, that League Cup against Chelsea in I was just pulling it up to remember when it was, January 2008, the semifinals. That for me was the first time that I was really, I'd been an Everton supporter for a couple of years at that point, so I was locked. It was the first time it was like a match with consequence that I was locked into, which, of course, they lost.
yep.
But, just being able to have that experience, here I am, 19, getting to totally have a new team that I'm, jumping up and down for, was really kind of special to experience that. So that one kind of resonates with me. It's been fun, Patty, to read, now that I'm kind of devouring what you and Greg write, and I'm learning more about the game and the analytics and things like that. I think Seamus Coleman is probably somebody I wouldn't have really paid a whole lot of attention to. I'm starting to learn about, the ways that the defensive players, impact the game. But I will say this, Lucas Digne for me is probably up there on this club specifically as being so fun to watch. And I forgot whether it was you or Greg wrote about his impact a few weeks ago. It's really cool to kind of now watch him and just the way he plays both ways and the way he impacts the game and his speed. Patty, you mentioned the American Evertonians. I was wondering if that was in your mailbag, if that was an American who asked you why the Everton's so slow. Because that seems like a very, very American, they're not fast enough. And I think about Digne and I think about Decore as kind of bringing that to the club. So, but obviously, I mean, how fun has it been watching Calvert-Lewin, the past 2 months, but going back to the restart? That's really been the story, Patty, about the physics of his headers was so cool just to see that. So yeah, those are some of the guys that stand out and have stood out. I have not read yet, by the way, about Hamas, the new story up today. I know it wasn't by you, Patty, about how it's, you know, I guess you could probably sum it up better, but I am looking forward to seeing that because it seems like a stark change from what we were reading about him in September.
Yeah, I guess Hamas's story and the story that's on the site today is maybe the story of Everton's season so far. Such promise initially, and it's slightly faded. And I did want to get into talking a little bit about your guys' impressions of the season as it has been. So, Rob, I mean, for you, what have you made of maybe the business Everton did in the summer, how that reflected on the pitch, and what we've seen in terms of the tail off over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think like most people over here who are Everton fans with me, we were maybe stunned is the right word when the Hamas deal went down, because you know suddenly there was a guy who there was some sparkle there that it seemed had been lacking a little bit, maybe something that I thought really could bring out a little bit more, especially with Richarlison. And then over those first three or four games, you really see that, and it just seemed like every ball that they would send in, that somebody would get ahead on it, that every pass would connect, and you started, you know, to get a sense that there was something building here. But then over the past 4 weeks, and I was just reading the story this morning actually about Hamas, pardon me, and you know that was really eye opening in some ways to the way that other clubs have kind of figured that out so quickly. Is that something that you found is just sort of a recent trend in the league, or you know, are teams always this quick to adapt in the past, or has it been a lot more stubbornness on the part of management to kind of adapt so much so frequently so quickly?
Yeah, it's interesting because somebody else made the same point to me over Twitter earlier. I posted the article from my fellow writer in the UK, Michael Cox. It is a really good article, and one of the responses that came back was, wow, we've been sussed out within 4 or 5 games. What is going on? And my response to that was that's not unusual, that now there's so much data, there's so much analysis, scouting times are more and more sophisticated. They're ever more sophisticated now. And I think even over the course of one game, analytics teams and certainly scouting teams will be able to pull up a wealth of information on what's worked, what hasn't worked for the side they're set to face. And if you watched Everton after the last international break, so that's the games against Liverpool, Southampton and Newcastle, I think you would have been able to see that there was a weakness on that side of the pitch, that Everton's right. And sides have preyed on that. You look at Southampton scored one of their goals kind of immediately down that side with a cross into the box, and Newcastle also did the same late in the match. So I think it's increasingly commonplace to be found out and to have to adapt and continually adapt. And that's because I think that this season that's going to be more apparent than ever, because so many games are kind of flung close together. Teams are working around the clock to find solutions. And it'll become about squad depth, and it'll become about having enough variety, enough variation to almost overcome the problems that are in your way. And that brings me on, I think, to the point I was going to make, which is I don't think Everton have found solutions to, first of all, sides working out how to play against them, but also overcoming absences, people like Richarlison when James is being injured. There's been one way of playing that worked for 5 or 6 games. It might work again, but without all the kind of component parts, Everton aren't the same. So, and you, I think it was you, Kev, there just kind of effectively nodding verbally in appreciation of what's just been said there. I mean, what have you made of the drop off over the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's been, you know, for us, or for me, I should say, you know, some of those 6:30 a.m. Local time kickoffs lose a little luster when, you know, I've got a you know 11-week-old son at home, so you know I'm actually, you know, awake at random times, So, you know, then it's like, oh, well, I'm already awake. You know, this is perfect. and then it's not as fun when they don't score the goals, to sound like a typical American. It's amazing to see the drop off when you had the players missing and realizing the lack of depth. You know, Richarlison, Rob, I think you'll certainly appreciate this comparison I thought of with Richarlison. He reminds me somewhat of AJ Pierzynski, where you want him on your club, but you hate him if he's not on your club. and Patty, that's a former baseball player who's not nearly at the caliber of Richarlison. But
do you think Tim Cahill, it would be another example of that? Because I remember he'd go away when he scored a goal, Cahill, he'd go away to the corner flag, even if he was playing away from home against opposition, and he'd do his boxing routine. And I just remember all these images of opposition fans getting really irate watching him do that. It was almost like an affront to them. And he was the guy that would kind of niggle a little bit, and he'd get in the face of the opposition. Everton fans would love him, but opposition fans would maybe hate him a little bit too.
Yeah, and you know, any opposition fan, they would love Richarlison if he was on their club. I mean, he's so strong, and his speed. I mean, you know, he goes down a lot, but it's because they're putting two or three guys on him every time he touches the ball. But yeah, it's been quite stark to see what's been missing with him out of the lineup, and obviously Digne missing, and then, you know, what's been going on with James, and you're not getting the touches for Calvert-Lewin you want. And man, Rob, I'm with you with Jordan Pickford, because you want him to be great, and you're just rooting for him. And he has that, was it Liverpool, where he had like some incredible saves, and then you just, there's just still that one or two that you're like, how does that happen? Like, how does that go in? And those are crushing. So you just, you want to see him kind of get back and get right and be consistent. But Patty, I'm kind of happy to see, You probably get so many questions about Anthony Gordon. I know you had one in your mailbag, because when he stepped in during the restart, I was mesmerized at what he brought. He's just so quick and skillful, and watching him a little bit in the Carabao games, I was just like, you kind of sit there being like, and you've done a great job explaining why he's not in there, but still, you just, when the offense seems to be lacking, you know, the attack seems to be lacking creativity, you're wondering, you know, could Anthony Gordon be that spark? And he's one of those guys that I really gravitated to, and then you're just kind of wishing he was out there more.
Yeah, and I think that goes for most Everton fans, to be honest, which is why we keep getting asked about him and why he's not being selected. It just felt like Richarlison's absence through suspension, it felt like a massive opportunity for others to put their hands up for more regular inclusion, the guys on the fringes of the first team. So maybe not only Anthony Gordon, but also Alex Iwobi and Bernard and players like that. And I wonder if you ask the question about the three of those guys and say, who has done that? Who has reinforced their own claims without Richarlison? Then you'd probably only say Bernard, and that was in a one-off game against Manchester United. I just think Everton miss Richarlison because he brings aggression with and without the ball. He's kind of, the way I keep describing him, is almost the motor, the engine of this team. He's the talisman in attack, and presses the ball, wins the ball, fights to win the ball, but also is so aggressive in the way that he runs at the opposition and scores goals and leaps in the air, all those kinds of things. I just think without him, Everton have lacked that edge. And it's up to the collective as a whole, so not just one individual to maybe replace him. But Anthony Gordon seemed to me to be the one that would be closest to doing that, because there's an element of fearlessness about his game. He can do some of those same things. He looks to come inside on his right foot and strike the ball at goal, as we saw in those Carabao games. So I think it's been a disappointment for fans. It's also been a disappointment for me, even as a journalist, to see him not get those opportunities. And that's been the failure, I think, of the last three games. Not only have they not replaced Richarlison, but they've probably not learned that much about the players, not in a positive sense anyway, about what they can bring when he's not there. So yeah, the questions will rumble on whenever he's not picked. I'm expecting them now. I've got a list of things in my head that I know are going to come whenever we do like a mailbag, and it's always Moise Keane, it's always Anthony Gordon, it's always Jordan Pickford, and both of you guys have spoken about Jordan Pickford there, but if my editor Laura is listening to this, she will know that. We've had so many conversations over the last few weeks where I've just said to her, listen, unless something absolutely outstanding happens, I am not writing about Jordan Pickford again for the foreseeable. We've said everything we're able to say about him, and he almost just needs that time to, I think, just kind of go away and focus on his game and not be the center of attention. But whenever that looks like it's going to happen, he becomes the story again. And yeah, it's just this, it almost this circus around him now that's developed, that continues even when he goes away on an international break, that probably is quite difficult for him to deal with. I imagine at this moment in time, quite difficult for him to kind of get his head straight and to put some of that criticism behind him. We had this story a couple of days ago on Sky Sports now. This pod is likely to go out on Friday. I think it was on Wednesday. England's goalkeeping coach, a guy that used to be at Everton under Sam Allardyce, Martin Margetson, went on Sky Sports and effectively did a feature on all the flaws in Jordan Pickford's game. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody do that, certainly not before an international, a set of international fixtures. I just thought it was a really, really curious thing for him to do, to almost stick the boot in a little bit on this lad that's quite clearly down on his confidence. So I'm very much hoping that he doesn't become the story in the coming weeks. Very much hoping that Anthony Gordon doesn't, because I do believe Gordon deserves a chance. I think the one thing as Evertonians that we can look forward to when it comes to football returning is that for that game against Fulham, Richarlison's back from suspension, adding something different then again to the Everton attack and kind of hopefully remedying some of the ills we've seen that have emerged over the last few weeks. But I wanted to ask you guys if you had seen the Manchester United game and if so, what you made of that, because that felt to me like maybe one of the most disappointing performances of the season.
I have to confess, I missed the first half of that, so I turned it on in the second, and so it's hard to compare. I guess that's what I need to ask you first, is what were the first half of that game compared like to the second? Because I came out of the second half, it's weird because I enjoyed watching it, but there were times also where I wanted to hit my head against the wall, especially in those last 5 minutes when there were a couple of chances, very good chances, and then it just became same old Everton in a way. I mean, they missed on two very good chances, and then you know, Man U goes down and scores to clinch it. But for the most part, I mean, I thought at times I thought I saw. There was, you know, I felt like, oh, there's a little sign there that maybe it just felt like maybe something was coming together, that something was turning, and then just, but it seemed unfulfilled. Having seen the whole match, what, you know, is my take mistaken there? Was it worse in the first half? Was it better?
Yeah, I think we actually did see quite a marked improvement in the second half, and that didn't reflect in the overall scoreline, but I felt like Everton had more control on the game.
Yeah.
They created more opportunities, better opportunities, and they just seemed a little bit more connected throughout the field. First half was a tough watch. The issues that are highlighted in Michael Cox's piece today on the site, I think, were kind of laid bare for everyone to see. But particularly on the right, Manchester United created a numerical advantage there and made things very difficult for Seamus Coleman. You had Mason Holgate returning, and I think Mason Holgate returning for Everton is a massive boost in a lot of ways, but it maybe was too much too soon for him to be thrown into that game against that caliber of opposition. And I think the defence looked rusty as a result. And almost, I felt as though they'd lost the game by half-time, and maybe that's defeatist, but I felt as though the way Manchester United play, they're such a good side on the road, such a good side away from home, that whenever they have an advantage, they just sit deep and they counter-attack and they use that pace, as we saw for the third goal. So, I mean, you actually got to see the best of the game, probably, Rob, which is something, at least. It kind of, when you guys speak about getting up at 6:30 a.m., I remember shortly after I graduated, spending a year teaching English in Thailand, and their games would kick off at maybe 3 a.m. and I would still get myself up to go and watch them. And then I'd be so tired for work the next day and just utterly furious because I'd stayed up in vain to watch Everton lose. There was one game, it was a Manchester City League Cup match, a semi-final, second leg, and Everton, I think, had won the first leg 2-1 and had scored pretty early on at the City of Manchester Stadium, the Etihad Stadium now, through Ross Barkley. And there's a really controversial goal for Raheem Sterling, who cuts the ball back, even though the ball's probably a couple of yards over the line. City go on to win the game. I was just so tired. It was too early in the morning. And yeah, I think that's just the experience. Must be the experience. I remember thinking that must be the experience of an international Evertonian and what it's like on a regular basis. Was that your experience on Saturday, Kevin, when you watched the Manchester United game?
Yeah, pretty similar. I missed, you know, we have a stupid daylight savings time here. So we had to move our clocks back an hour. So it's even earlier, the matches. And I like Rob, caught the second half. And I think in that it's that final flurry, like for all the positive that they built up at times in the second half, the final flurry just didn't lack, you know, it just lacked a lot, and you're just kind of waiting for something to come through, and it wasn't there. And I actually want to go back quickly, Patty, to the Bears comparison. When the Bears played in London last year, going back to in terms of times of watching games, I wrote about, there's a very lively, interested, passionate Chicago Bears fan base in London, in the UK. And I got to meet a bunch of them when I was there, and I wrote about their experience. And a lot of them picked up the Bears in the 80s when the Bears were really good, and that coincided with when NFL games started to get broadcast in the UK. But for them, whenever the Bears have a night game here, you know, 7:30 kickoff in Chicago, that game is starting at, you know, 1:30 in the morning. And those are the true, I mean, I can't, you know, I'm sitting here complaining about a 6:30 a.m. you know, Everton kickoff. There's probably some Evertonians in California who are telling me that I'm not a true Evertonian for complaining about that. But you know, it's look, I tell you what though, the Liverpool match, I set my alarm. I was not going to miss a minute of the Derby, so I was sure to watch every second of that. And look, that was so much fun. That match, of course, you know, it wasn't the result we were all hoping for, but at least it was exciting.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Before we head off, guys, just wanted to get your hopes and your expectations for Everton for the remainder of the season. Ancelotti has gone on record more or less and said that European qualification is the aim, and silverware, a trophy, is the aim in the coming seasons as well. Is that achievable, do you think, this season, Rob, given what you've seen from the squad?
If they can get everybody back and keep them back, Then yeah, I mean, I was being very guarded coming into this season, especially, you know, I wasn't the way the previous season ended. I wasn't really sure what to make of what they were going to be able to do coming into this year. But this, you know, maybe I'm just being buoyed by the rapid start. But I still do think that they can get to that level of competition and start getting tangible results, things to put on a shelf and say, this is what we've accomplished. I don't know if it's going to happen though, that this, maybe not this season. And that's maybe my, you know, gun shyness from the past few years speaking to me that, you know, you think it's going to be there. You think that there's going to be a big step forward. You think Lukaku is going to defy the odds and sign that contract, and it doesn't happen. So, but at the end of the day, that's, you know, it's good to dream like that. It's good to have a lottery ticket on your TV when you turn it on Saturday mornings. And I was a guy, I remember there was a time we were playing, the Pirates were in Arizona. And for me, that was great because it was a Friday. You know, I got there on Thursday and was out. The game was late on Friday. And for some reason, I was still kind of adjusting time-wise. So I woke up at like, you know, 3:30 in the morning, Arizona time. And you know, it was only a half hour away from the start of the Everton match. So I was like, well, I can do this. And I did. And I paid for it that Saturday night game. But yeah, I'm holding out hope for this year. Not great hope, but at least hope of progress and a foundation being laid for those kind of, you know, successes in the next couple of years.
And Kevin, for you, obviously, like we've been saying, the last few weeks haven't been so good for Everton. But are you confident things are heading in the right direction under Ancelotti?
Oh, I mean, certainly under Ancelotti, it's been fun to see. And I think the transfer market was just so brilliant to see who he's able to attract. Just the fact that he's this ultimate recruiter. You know, Rob knows, you know, and Patty, you know this too. When we cover teams, we love for them to be relevant, right? You know, and I, yeah. You know, I don't root for the Chicago Bears, but it makes my job a lot easier if come December they're in the playoff hunt. You know, that they're relevant, and you know, you'd love to see Everton when we get to the spring, you know, doing the math that they could get in the top six. You know, I think that should be a reasonable goal by the way that they started, to just be in that conversation. I remember when Carlo first got here, when they went on that run right away, and we were all sitting there doing, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, they could actually get in here." And then obviously things fell off a little bit, quite quickly. But yeah, that's what, you know, I'm hopeful that they could at least, you know, you just want them to make things interesting because they obviously haven't the past couple seasons. And that I think I would hope it's not too much to ask, but you know, it would certainly make the matches come February, March, April pretty, because I'm excited for the Carabao matches with Man U in December. I think it'll be fun for them to be in contention there as well.
I just want to be able to look at my friends who are Liverpool fans and tell them to shut up. That's what I want.
It doesn't happen very much, Rob, does it? Unfortunately, we know this by now. But guys, I wanted to finish up with a question, actually, and maybe a bit of a fun one in the end. Which of the three sides that we cover, respectively, Bears, Pirates, or Everton, will be first to win a title, and why? And let's expand this out. Maybe not necessarily a title, but a trophy of any kind. Kevin, are you gonna be rooting for the Bears on this one?
Oh, well, the Bears don't have a quarterback who's worthy of getting them to any hardware anytime soon. But I'll say this about the NFL: like I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of parity. So, you know, I would imagine of the three leagues. Although Rob, baseball has certainly lent itself in this direction over the past, you know, decade plus, you know, that there are more opportunities for teams like the Bears to finally break through. But it's hard to picture it. And as Rob knows, the Pirates didn't show much last season. So, but and then Everton, it's like there's like too many competitors ahead of Everton too. I'm not answering the question. I'm rambling because I don't know if there is an answer. I'll say the Pirates. Why not? Let's have, you know.
Okay.
Rob's probably shaking his head and rolling his eyes at that. But you know, hey, look, I'm in Chicago. The White Sox just put up an incredible run, so you know it can happen.
I'm going to say you're crazy, Kevin. the first team I ruled out of that triumvirate was the Pirates. Their ownership is not good. So I don't see, I mean, the Pirates are certainly trying hard. I don't think their window of opportunity to become a playoff team opens for another 3 or 4 years. And even then, the odds are great. And it's hard to say then again, too. I put that with the caveat of, you know, baseball is probably going to change its playoff system to more of like what we saw this year, where it was maybe not 16 teams in there. I'm a purist when it comes to baseball. I don't like the wild card teams. I don't like the addition of all that stuff. I prefer to have the really good teams. If you're playing 164 games, 162 games, whatever, you need to have those teams rewarded with the playoffs. And I think if you're a 500 team, you shouldn't go to the playoffs. But even with that, you know, change looming, I don't see the Pirates contending for a World Series championship, let alone a division title, in the next 3 or 4 years. The Bears, you're right, they need some help. and I'm, you know, even with the parity that the salary cap brings to the NFL, I'm not sure they're going to hoist the Lombardi Trophy anytime soon. So that leaves me with Everton, and they have an owner who, at least now, finally is willing to open the pockets a little bit and spend some money. They seem to have more of a plan from management about how to assemble a cast of players that can perform, and they have guys on that field who have a little bit of sizzle, and I think they need to find a way. Going back to what you were saying earlier about Pickford, they do need a way to find to get him back to being confident again. And as I've watched him, you know, it's funny when you mention how, you know, you just don't want to write about him almost, because it's just at that point. The Pirates had a guy named Pedro Alvarez years ago who was the first round draft pick, who was a slugger in college, who was supposed to get to the major leagues and just hit home run after home run and be the kind of, you know, thumper in the lineup that the Pirates haven't had for a few years. And he was finally going to be the guy who could solidify third base and play there for the next, you know, 5, 6, 10 years. And it failed in every way. He never became a prolific home run hitter. His defense was terrible. He was awful with the media. And it got to a point where even when good things happened, it just felt bad that something bad was going to happen, and eventually had to get away from the Pirates. And you just hope that something like that doesn't turn that badly for Pickford. I still say that with international competitions, I still think there's a chance Everton finds some sort of hardware winning success before either the Pirates or the Bears.
I think that is the perfect note to finish the podcast on. an upbeat note, a note of positivity. And I think we need that probably now more than ever, given that Everton headed into the international break with a succession of defeats. So thank you for that, Rob. Cheers to Rob and Kevin for joining me. It's been fantastic to get your thoughts on Everton and your Everton experiences, your Everton memories up to this point. So really appreciate it. And thanks for listening. We'll be back at the same time next week.